Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today we are capitalizing on some of the excitement in blockchain and distributed applications and bringing on a guest to talk about something entirely different. And when we were just talking before about where we would go with the show, I was a little surprised that it is an area that I had not really been exposed to. So I was really, really excited, and I think you will be as well. But today we have Craig Sproul, who is the CEO of Crowd Machine. Welcome today, Craig. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for inviting me on the show. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So, Craig, one of our associates bumped in or went by your booth at a blockchain convention in San Jose, and that's kind of we're looking at Dimfert's applications and the art of the possible in distributed applications, distributed ledgers, things of such sort. And you'll talk about a very interesting one in that arena, so to speak, or decentralization at least. But first of all, give us background on yourself. Tell us, you know, how you got to be a CEO. Have you always been this startup junkie? Have you worked for a big organization before? What's your background?
I've done a little bit of everything. So I would consider myself to be sort of a startup junkie, but I have a background, started out life as a programmer, software engineer, created lots of different applications for different industries all over the world. But ended up being the CEO of a systems integration company as a function of that, but have done stints as CTOs of as a CTO of a public company and other things along the way. So a bit of a variety of tech background in a number of different roles, both in large companies, public companies, as well as startups.
Okay. Is it been, what's your experience of being a CEO? How long have you been doing this? What's the status of the company? Are you you doing pretty well moving forward?
Sure. I've been a CEO for quite a while. I actually started out life pretty much straight out of school being a CEO. Started my own little company and worked in that for a long period of time. As I said, building different sorts of applications. It's been an interesting journey, has quite a history in the tech space. I've seen a lot of change over the years, but a lot of the things are the same as well. Being a CEO has its rewards, but at the same time, it's a lot of work. And when you're passionate about the industry, you tend to wear that on your sleeve, particularly as a CEO, as you try to grow your company and make change for good. You know, I'm at a stage in my career where my vision and my passion is about making positive change. And that might sound a little sort of idealistic, but it's the reality of where I'm at this stage of my life.
I concur with that entirely. I feel myself being in that same arena. So
yeah, that's cool. That's good.
Yeah, so you in Silicon Valley, San Jose out there, right? Did you move there to start your company? Were you always there? What's the difference between being there with a startup versus being somewhere else?
If you're going to run a startup, well, formally, I wouldn't say right now, but formally, if you're going to run a startup, then Silicon Valley is the place to be, simply because really the venture capital here is here, and it's sort of a microcosm of like-minded technical people. So it's always been a bit of a draw card for people like myself over the course of time, particularly with startups, as I said, because of the capital that's available. However, that's changed in recent times. We're seeing other areas of capital investment from elsewhere in the world, and particularly ICOs have changed that to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But the Valley's an interesting place. You know, it's crazy busy, lots of congestion, very expensive to live here, but certainly has been, you know, I think everybody in this industry is aware of what it's offered to the tech industry over the course of time.
Yeah, the value of what you get there.
The value is here. Okay. It's a great place. It really is. But as I said, I think times are changing a little bit. You're seeing a lot more investment in other areas of the world and startups popping up all over the place now.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. We're going to come back, though, and talk to Craig about what it is that they're doing at Crowd Machine.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Craig Sproul, the CEO of Crowd Machine. Now, Craig, what you're doing there, and you said you have three offerings, basically. And the reason why you're doing it, when I heard that, I was like, wow, interesting. I had just never thought around these lines before. But tell us about the industry problem, the your passion, what it's at, what are you trying to solve?
Well, as I said, Chris, I started out life as a software engineer, and I look at the way that we write applications today in comparison to the way that we wrote applications when I started out. And honestly, it really hasn't changed a lot. Sure, there are new technologies, there are new development platforms, there's quite a lot of automation that didn't exist. But fundamentally, we're still writing code, making calls to external systems and doing all those sorts of things. And it's a model that doesn't scale really well. You know, we've got Agile now and we have Scrums and all those sorts of things, and it's addressed some of the issues, but the model doesn't really scale. And if you look at the stats that come out of companies like Gartner and Forrester and the rest of the analysts, there's a clear indication that the demand for software in the future is going to grow beyond what it even is today. So how do you actually meet the demand, the application demand in the market, if we keep doing the same thing over and over again? So what Crowd Machine really is, as you mentioned, sort of three parts. The first part is we are currently building a decentralized computer. So it's a decentralized infrastructure. So think of it like being AWS, but dispersed. And people will be able to onboard their spare capacity of their mobile device or their notebook computer or a server in a data center and participate as a node on the network in terms of processing real-time apps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're building right now. It's a very intelligent decentralized computer, but inside that computer or in that network of nodes, we actually have already built a development platform that completely removes the notion of writing code. And I don't say that lightly, because it's a very difficult thing to achieve, but today we have some very sophisticated customers actually utilizing that technology. We have people running banking systems and case management solutions and medical systems and IoT solutions, actually creating those solutions using the technology. And they're not programmers in the classic sense that build those solutions on the technology. And they are very sophisticated apps. So the way to think about what that is and how it works is to think about applications that you may have written if you're a developer, or you may have used if you're a user of applications. And each of these applications exhibit what we refer to as patterns of behavior. So situation. For example, let's take a medical system of some description. You may have the admission of a patient to a hospital. That's a behaviour of a medical solution. You may have the request for blood gas analysis in that solution. That's a behaviour of that application. So in our world, we allow you to model these behaviours pictorially. We have a very expert solution or expert system, which is which prompts and asks you questions about the types of problems you're trying to resolve, and it forms the logic around those particular behaviours. And then you bring the behaviours together, and you've got your app. Mm-hmm. So it allows people with really good domain knowledge, you're still going to be able to mind map it out or understand the logical structure that you're trying to implement and obviously understand the problem, but it allows people who aren't programmers to actually get in and build very sophisticated solutions that meet those needs. So that's the development piece that exists in the network. The third piece that we have is a thing that we refer to as CrowdShare. And the easy way to understand that is just to think about GitHub and what GitHub is today. However, in our world, you take these behaviors that you've created, you can put them into CrowdShare. And I might be building an application. I can go to CrowdShare and say, hey, there's that behavior that I really, you know, I like. I want it. It's going to do pretty much exactly what I want. I can bring that into my application for free. However, when that behavior gets executed on the network, the person that created that behavior and put it in the CrowdShare in the first place gets rewarded for its consumption. So what that does is it allows us to grow an ecosystem of contributors who have great domain knowledge or intellectual capital that they want to monetize or promote in the network, and they can put that into CrowdShare, and other people on the network can actually use it. So there's sort of the three pieces. The app development environment we refer to as the Crowd Machine App Studio, that's already created. CrowdShare is already created, and the Crowd Computer we're going to release at the end of 2018.
Interesting. So while you were talking, I was sitting here kind of listening to and thinking of from a security footprint. I'm a security guy. We look at what is the security of the future, and a lot of, you know, when I think blockchain, distributed ledgers, distributed data, it helps with the ability to make sure people can't change information that has been put into a ledger. When we're talking about distributed processing, it seems like to me it opens up some more thoughts to how do you secure those distributed processes? You know, your data, your data distributed between multiple places, the communication between the multiple ones. I mean, you're obviously transferring information. If you're processing people's data that might have some kind of compliance related to it across distributed resources, how do you intend to handle the security in that?
Well, it's the same sort of argument that you would have around, say, for example, Ethereum's EVM works today, right? So you're still basically working with data, and it's the same principle. You're using all the industry standard protocols for security, and you're ensuring that everything you do is compliant with the security that is available for us today. So there's encryption and, in transmission, encryption and storage, all of the standard approaches that you typically adopt in anything that you do. And when you're building any app in this era, you need to be mindful of that regardless of whether it's distributed or centralized. Okay. So it's I guess, answering the same question that you would ask yourself, as I said, is if you were talking about creating a new form of blockchain where you've got distributed processing, you are distributing data and working with that data on different nodes, and you have a responsibility as a vendor in producing that to ensure that it is as secure as it can possibly be, given what we have at our disposal today. We have, the best thing to do is actually read the white paper. So if you go to our website and take a look at the white paper, we talk about this network infrastructure, and you'll see in there there's two different types of nodes. We have these super nodes, and we have these contributing nodes, and the super nodes are responsible for ensuring that everything in the environment is compliant. So basically a proof of trust, a approach applies to it, and anything that's determined to be perhaps a bad actor in any way, shape, or form is evicted from the network. So there's a lot that we do, and I could spend all day talking about it, but there's a lot that we do to ensure that we're as secure as we can possibly be, given the security standards that exist today.
Okay. Well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. We're back to talk about that. I wanted to further on that topic of the distributed nature and the security aspect. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Okay, welcome back. We're talking to Craig Sproul, the CEO of Crowd Machine. Now, Craig, we were talking before the break about the distributed nature and making data security, the transmission between the distributed resources and everything. And you had mentioned that there was like the new blockchain, there was some cryptographic proof of the distributed nature of this. Are you using hash chains like in the blockchain for that?
No, I think it's important to distinguish between a blockchain and what we do.
Okay.
We're not trying to be a blockchain. In fact, we're blockchain agnostic. So in other words, we look at the blockchain market as an evolving market. It's an emerging market, obviously. Very exciting one. It's going to have a big impact on all the industries that we work in. Hence, that's why we're interested in and do work with it. But we believe that blockchains will verticalize to some extent, and you're already starting to see it, right? So not all of these blockchains can exist as generic platforms that handle all basic types of transactions, and you will see blockchains tend to verticalize. Ripple, for example, has made an impressive start in the banking industry, and you'll see other blockchains verticalize. So we're blockchain agnostic, and what that basically means is that we integrate into all these blockchains as they're emerging and allow somebody to build an application that leverages a blockchain that they require to perform their task. Now today, for example, with Ethereum, you can integrate into smart contracts on Ethereum and leverage the methods that exist in those smart contracts. So we're not a blockchain.
Okay.
And we're not trying to be a blockchain. We're working across blockchains. What we are is a method of creating applications much, much faster. Like we've seen examples of about 45 times faster time to market of apps than the traditional approach that our customers have experienced. We're trying to enable the proliferation of decentralized applications that leverage blockchain by democratizing the app development process and making it faster.
Okay.
In our world, we still have a computational requirement to run these applications, and if you again look at the white paper, you'll see that our applications are dispersed as fragments across the network. And if you go back to the behavior discussion we had earlier, then you're only ever sort of executing one or two different behaviors in an application at any one particular point in time, and those behaviors, as I said, are dispersed across the network. Each of those behaviors themselves are cryptographically secured. The data associated with those behaviors as it flows in and out is cryptographically secured, and it's stored in a secure distributed database across the network. So as I said, there are two different types of node sets. There's the super nodes that we refer to, and then there's the activity contributing nodes. The activity contributing nodes are things like your mobile phone, etc., which are just processing. And the super nodes, they are responsible for managing the routing, if you like, of the application request. So if I click on a button in an app, where is that CISOs are responsible for that. They're also responsible for persistence of data in a secure way and the synchronization of that data across the network. Mm-hmm. And locking down, it's a very important point. You can geo-lock data. We have customers, for example, today who contractually we're bound to ensure that their data does not leave the US. So mm-hmm. we ensure that that actually takes place. So you can lock data down to a particular distribution. So it's a long topic. We could literally talk about it all day. But suffice to say that we're not a blockchain. We work with blockchains, and everything that we do in our world is as secure, again, as we can possibly make it, given the security standards that exist.
Yeah.
We're leveraging pretty much everything you can to make sure it's locked down.
Yeah. Now, you had said earlier, and I think we missed it once we started the show, is that your industry problem you're solving is a shortage of developers. So you're trying to take the complexity of writing code out of the developers, make it streamlined, make it reproducible and done distributed. And then you just mentioned something I want to come back to, but first of all, the distributed nature of the development, and you said one of your CrowdShare does that distributed nature. How do you handle like a digital rights management for that, for licensing of a developer that would put a distributed code module in your CrowdShare?
Well, the contribution by an individual on the network, they retain ownership of that content, and that's one of the areas where we do use blockchain to ensure that we track the consumption of that content and even derivative works. So say, for example, I was to take something out of CrowdShare, it has the fundamental underpinnings of a capability or piece of functionality that I require. When I modify that, the network keeps track of the original works and any derivative works that flow from that point. So we can track all the way through the chain of change in a particular capability all the way back to its original contributor, original creator.
Uh-huh. And you can...
The way that we...
Let's just say, you can license that based on how much utilization of that module each distributed node is doing? Is that true?
That's exactly right. So, and if I can perhaps answer it in a different way, or maybe it's a little bit different, but in terms of the answer, but the compensation model, and this is allowing people who want to contribute into CrowdShare from around the world, the compensation model is based upon the actual compute cycles it takes to execute that behavior. So people are rewarded based upon the amount of compute it takes to execute the thing that they've created.
Mm-hmm.
And the community as a whole, say, for example, two people create something that's similar, and they both put it into CrowdShare, and somebody determines, or the community determines, look, this particular implementation of that piece of functionality is more efficient, it runs more quickly in my application, etc., then you might find that the community gravitates toward that piece of functionality and utilizes that much more than the other piece of functionality that is similar. So we're allowing the community to dictate what gets consumed and what doesn't. It's a little bit like, you know, the like scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person is rewarded again for their contribution by the amount of compute cycles that are executed on the network to run that piece of functionality.
Okay. So let's go from that conversation. We'll loop in the last one where you talked about that you can control where physically it's operated on and when it goes to another network, where it's at, where you're basically cloud on steroids of little application pieces running, is mm-hmm. how do you make that connection between the physical and the logical? I mean, the pretense of cloud is dynamically allocating resources that then we don't even know where they're really at in a physical sense. Do you have a way of mapping that and connecting that physical to that virtual to physical?
Yeah, sure. And that's how we actually remunerate people for their contributions, right? So we know exactly where something is running at any particular point in time. But the way to think about it, and it's a bit of a sort of a fun way or a fun analogy, is to think about a whole bunch of maybe blinking lights all over the planet, and each blinking light represents an activity contributing node, and those nodes, as they're blinking, are actually executing part of an application. Well, we know the node upon which that is executing. We know the channel through which that request was made. So in other words, if I'm an originator of an application, I click on a button, so I originate, you know, a request. That goes to a supernode. A supernode makes a determination as to where the, if it's a synchronous task, for example, the closest node is that's available for that task to be executed. So it keeps track of the actual requests as they go out, so we know exactly what devices are performing what tasks at any particular point in time, and we record payment channels against that. And that's how we actually reward the device owners, for example, for contributing their device to the network. But again, that piece of it won't be available until the end of the year, but certainly that's how it's testing in the lab.
You know,
we can map exactly where something's running at any particular point in time, and we record it.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking that you've made a big botnet that you could sell pieces to. Is that a good way to think about this?
Yeah, you could absolutely think about it like that. It's a pretty good analogy. It is a big botnet where each of these little bots, if you like, are different fragments of an application. And obviously they're deployed redundantly so that the application is always available regardless of where you are.
Uh-huh. Now you had said earlier, and I wanted to kind of your thoughts on that AI really spins into this and takes this from the point you're at even further. Talk about how you see AI coming into this in the future.
You know, Chris, that in and of itself is a large topic of conversation. But for a long time, I've been a firm believer that artificial intelligence is going to have a significant impact on everything we do in life, but even in the application development arena. And I've been working on this construct for quite a long while, where I believe that applications learn and evolve in their own right based upon their experience, much like a child does. You put a child into an environment and the child will grow and develop based upon the experience. Software will fundamentally end up in the same place through AI. So in our paradigm today, everything that I've been discussing with yourself and your listeners through the course of this conversation is all data-oriented. So a pattern of behavior, it's not like it's your typical binary executable where you compile it and you've got this static executable. Our applications exist as dynamic functional bodies of work. So what that means is that they can change in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, let's say I had a behavior which, again, to use blood gas analysis request, that behavior can be looking at those requests and perhaps determine that there's a more optimized way to make those requests, or there's a more optimized way to deliver results against those requests, and change itself in real time, if you wanted it to be better optimized for the task.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that artificial intelligence, and again, it's something we've been sort of working on in the background, artificial intelligence will evolve or have a role in software self-evolving over time based on its experiences. If you look at a lot of the large static systems that exist in enterprise today, and there's many that you could name, one of the key challenges that companies face is that they implement these solutions. They're very rigid. They've customized them extensively. And then the market changes and the solutions are customized and rigid to the extent where they can't easily be changed to meet the changing market demand. And so you end up in a situation where you've got an antiquated system that's not really meeting your market challenges, and then you've got to go and write other bits of code or other applications to plug into those antiquated systems to address market changes. I think software is going to evolve to a point where we get out of that paradigm. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take many, many years. But ultimately software is going to get to a point where it becomes acutely aware of the dynamic nature of the business that you're in, and it will change itself to better serve its purpose in the environment in which it's placed. So that is where I believe software will end up going, and we're trying to do our part along that, that journey, and something I've been working on for a long time.
Yeah. Well, this has definitely been very thought-provoking and an entirely interesting line of thought for me to go down. So I appreciate you being on today. If you could, put out any, how do people get a hold of you? Who would want to get a hold of you? What types of customers are you servicing or looking for? And just give some information about, a call to action about how people get a hold of you.
So we're all about growing a global community now. As I said, we're already in some very large enterprise customers. We had some great customers. But we're all about now taking our product to the market in a more community sort of friendly manner. So we're currently running a beta program, and if people go to crowdmachine.com, sign up for the newsletter, they can join the next beta. And we'd love to have you involved. We really appreciate feedback, so I want people to go and do the tutorial that we give you as a function of the beta, give me feedback so that the team can take that feedback and add functionality and capability to the product based upon that feedback. So go to crowdmachine.com, check it out, join the newsletter, get in the beta program, and you can contact me, Craig, at crowdmachine.com, and I'll answer any questions that you have.
All right. Well, thank you very much today for joining today, Craig. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Chris. It's been great. And thank you very much to all the listeners for taking the time.
All right. Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.